Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 41 degrees, overcast skies, and a high wind warning in the forecast for Sitka and PA tonight. Today is Thursday, February 2nd, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. A foundation established by one of the co-founders of Microsoft is sending hundreds of thousands of dollars to a project in Southeast Alaska. The Paul G. Allen Family Foundation awarded $225,000 to the Alaska Conservation Foundation. The grant is made to an Anchorage-based foundation, but it will be spent in Sitka, Cake, Huna, Heidelberg, and Wrangell. Brian McNitt works in Sitka as a rainforest coordinator for the conservation group. He says this money will help communities develop new sustainable businesses in line with the Forest Service's new framework for the Tongass National Forest.
A really good example is all over the Tongass, there's a big need for stream and forest restoration work. And in some communities, there's a high capacity to get that kind of work done. And in some communities, there is either non-existent or quite low capacity to have that happen. There might be a lack of entrepreneurial skills, a lack of actual on-the-job kinds of skills, or it could be a lack of capacity in the community to be involved in that kind of planning process.
McNitt says the program, the Allen Money Funds, will help develop that capacity. The Allen Foundation's money is joined by $750,000 from the Margaret A. Cargill Foundation. Bill Vesneski is Director of Evaluation Research and Planning for the Allen Family Foundation. He says the foundation is able to make a positive impact in a way a lot of other granting organizations can't.
There's more flexibility in private money, and so it has an opportunity to incentivize and spur innovation in the field and incentivize new approaches and new solutions to difficult problems.
And all of the money it's sent to Alaska in this round of grants has been geared toward Native communities.
So some of those grants are to tribal groups. Some of those are to tribally led organizations. Some of those are to organizations that are working in close collaboration with the tribes and Native people. So it's sort of a mix in terms of the organization itself, but all of them together are working in those communities.
In addition to the Alaska Conservation Foundation, the Paul Allen Family Foundation also sent grants to a Native Wellness Initiative of the South Central Foundation and to Kwanic Broadcasting, which produces national Native news. The most recent Interior Department appropriations bill includes provisions aimed at helping Alaska's struggling timber industry, but one group says they go too far. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Budget bills often attract extra provisions that might not gain the attention needed to pass on their own. That was the case for the most recent Federal Department of the Interior's appropriations measure. Senator Lisa Murkowski inserted four items targeting logging in Southeast's Tongass National Forest. They also apply to South Central's Chugach National Forest. Robert Dillon is Murkowski's Energy and Natural Resources Committee spokesman. He says one provision changes the appeals process for timber sales and other projects.
It says, listen, before we give you the permit, before you finalize the process, let's go ahead and do any appeals and take care of it, just to streamline it a bit.
We see that to be very consistent with our intentions of taking a more collaborative approach to forest management.
Alaska Regional Forester Beth Pendleton says it makes official what's already being done.
And I think it will increase the likelihood of resolving concerns and then resulting in a better, more informed decision in the long run.
The Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, a group that's filed many formal objections, doesn't like the provision. Bob Claus is CX Forest Program Director.
You know, on the face of it, it doesn't make sense that an appeal would happen before final approval. It happens after. That's why they call it an appeal.
Another part of the appropriations bill aims to make it easier to sell red cedar, which is less common in the Tongass than hemlock or spruce. SEAC doesn't like that provision either.
The Alaska Red Cedar Export Rider doesn't do anything to help high value added industry in Southeast Alaska, which is where we think we ought to be capturing the value from the trees that are harvested here.
You know, it's correct in that it does provide some authority for the export.
The Forest Service's Pendleton says that's not the only priority.
after that that first right to process and mill is given to our local Alaska mills and West Coast mills.
Another provision exempts logging road construction runoff from Environmental Protection Agency review. Pendleton and Murkowski spokesman Dillon say it just continues what's been done for 30 years. But CX Clause says it ignores an opportunity to protect clean water.
There's been a history of bad construction practice of roads in the Tongass, and this seeks to continue that, which we would object to.
The final provision continues waiving a requirement that the Forest Service review management plans every 15 years. Pendleton says it could impact decisions elsewhere, but not here.
All of our plans, well, for the Tongass and for the Chugach National Forest, are current in Alaska at this time.
Murkowski, in a press release, says the provisions are particularly important since the Interior Department owns about two-thirds of Alaska's land. Dillon, her spokesman, says the add-on should help what was once one of Southeast's main economic engines.
We don't want timber harvests and other activity to be stopped because of bureaucratic processes. So these provisions kind of fix loopholes and keep things going forward.
Pendleton says the Forest Service has no objections.
These provisions in the Interior Appropriations Bill, I find them all to be helpful. There's really nothing in the appropriations bill for Alaska that's really upsetting, I guess, or of really any major concern.
But Claus of SEAC thinks it's the wrong way to bring about change.
Tacking things onto appropriations bills is not the best way to make public policy.
The Forest Service says the provisions mesh with new rules for forest management plans. Other Alaska items in the appropriations measure cover native health programs and facilities, rural water system improvements, and the Alaska Volcano Observatory. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Commercial Dungeness crabbers in Southeast will have a little more leeway in marking their pot buoys this year. The Alaska Board of Fish approved new regulation language at a meeting in Petersburg in January that gets rid of a requirement that a permit holder's buoys are all marked identically. A proposal to change the regulation was submitted by the commercial fishing group, the Southeast Alaska Fishermen's Alliance. CFA Executive Director Kathy Hansen testified in support of the proposal and submitted photos from a crabber ticketed last summer.
He's bought buoys different years, depending on the bays that they were fished in, the sun fade. They were all meant to be the same color. You can kind of see that they are. It's just a matter of you cannot actually get buoys to be identical.
Hansen said there were even variations in a set of brand new buoys from the manufacturer. The CFA proposal sought to change the regulation to require similar markings. Board member Bill Brown of Juneau remembered hearing about the issue at his first meeting in 2008.
We spent quite a bit of time defining the color red. As Arisa was concerned that a red buoy had faded, and I think it was a crabber with some faded red buoys was given a ticket by a cowboy of an enforcement officer. And it boiled down to most officers are reasonable, and most officers can understand essentially the same color, shape, size, and markings. And with the new definition, that covers all the bases.
The new regulation language produced during committee discussions in January says buoys have to be essentially the same in color, shape, size, and markings. The board approved that change 6-0, with John Jensen of Petersburg sitting out the vote. The second floor of the Alaska Department of Public Safety building in Juneau was evacuated for about an hour Monday while a structural engineer checked the facility. State Chief Procurement Officer Vern Jones says employees in the building heard a noise, which was determined to be the main structural beam shifting under the weight of heavy snow on the roof.
We're told the design of the building was meant to allow for some deflection, and the question really was that within what the building was designed for? And we were told that yes, it was, and that the building was safe to occupy. Almost certainly it was the snow on the roof, just the weight of the snow.
Signs posted on the first floor of the building informed workers that the second floor was off limits as of 12:15 Monday afternoon. Do not go upstairs, the signs warned. Deputy Public Safety Commissioner Terry Rebeck says employees were cleared to return at about 1:30 p.m. He says about 20 DPS employees were affected by the evacuation. Built in the 1970s, the structure was originally meant to be a temporary home for public safety employees. Last October, the Parnell administration opted not to build a new state office building in Juneau, which would have housed employees from the Departments of Public Safety, Labor, Fish and Game, and Corrections. Instead, the administration decided to focus efforts on renovating the Douglas Island office building. At the time, Administration Commissioner Becky Holtberg said the public safety building was not worth renovating and employees would have to be moved at some point. Jones says there's no timeline for moving those workers.
That's still an ongoing process. I really don't have any information to update you at the time, but it is an ongoing process.
In the dozen or so years he's managed the public safety building, Jones says this is the first time he can remember an issue with structural integrity. Weather forecasters say this January was the fifth coldest January in Fairbanks on record. The average temperature for the month at Fairbanks International Airport was almost 27 degrees below zero. The National Weather Service says that's 0.2 degrees colder than January 1969, the sixth coldest January for Fairbanks. The coldest January in Fairbanks occurred in 1906 with an average temperature of minus 36.4 degrees. Other Januaries in Fairbanks colder than last month were in 1966, 1934, 1971. No daily temperature records were broken in Fairbanks last month. The average temperature, however, was 19 degrees below normal for the month. Some weather forecast today for Sitka calls for rain, highs around 42, south winds 15 to 25 miles per hour, diminishing to east 15 miles per hour in the afternoon. And there is a high wind warning tonight for Sitka and Port Alexander. This is KCAW in Sitka.